Hello, my name is Rob Gellis, and today I am interviewing Alan Skerritt. Alan hosts a show called Crossroads in Rhythm on WGXC 90.7 FM. Alan, thank you so much for coming today for this interview.
Thank you, Rob, for the invitation. Well, my show is pretty much based on the collective music that evolved from black music, and particularly jazz and the genres that followed, you know, the jazz beat, which actually was precipitated by, you know, minstrel shows even before the end of slavery. There were various minstrel shows that traveled about the Northeast, Pennsylvania, etc., of which my uncle Maris was a member of one of those minstrel shows. So my family was very much interested in, of course, the history and the music. And my father comes from Lincoln, Pennsylvania, which is about 40 miles or so south of Philadelphia. And it's the place where Lincoln University is, where famous people like, Langston Hughes and Thurston Marshall and other people went to Lincoln. And my father and several of his brothers also attended there. And I spent some summers there. I would kind of go back and forth between Lincoln and Hudson as a child, as I had grandparents in both cities. And of course, being exposed to the music as I was, I became very interested in, you know, what was then the big band and some of the blues music that evolved out of the 1920s. And particularly, my father and my uncle would take me to see Duke Ellington, Count Basie, Lionel Hampton, Dinah Washington, and, you know, the people who were very, very big in the jazz sound in my early years, my single-digit years of age. So, of course, I became very indoctrinated, if you will, to that sound and the evolution of it over the course of my lifetime, which became R&B and then became soul and rock and roll, as we call it, and then rock and alternative and all of those venues of music that evolved from the basic jazz blues sound. So that's kind of where my background comes from, that makes me look at it in terms of the music is all the crossroads of these different, you know, venues that came to our society over the years.
It's very interesting about your family. Is Lincoln, is that closer to a border of a state?
Maryland.
It's not anywhere near Gettysburg, is it?
Not too far. It's kind of in between. If you had a triangle, you would see Gettysburg and Harrisburg. It was established in the 1850s.
Oh.
And, you know, I should remember what it was called before it was called Lincoln University. The historical significance of Lincoln University is that with the Underground Railroad from the south to the north, once you reached that spot where that university is now, you were a free person. And it was not too far from the Mason-Dixon line. And a school was founded there in the 1854, I believe, that became Lincoln University.
This university or college had an opportunity for people.
It was a black university.
Was it? But it gave men an opportunity to study.
Right. At that time.
And have a quality education.
Right, right.
So, I forgot, your family.
My family lived there. My grandfather raised his family there. And my grandmother's family had been there. They were free before slavery.
Oh, wow. That's quite...
And we have a mix of Lenape Indian family.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Now, what's the Hudson side of the family?
That's my mother's side of the family. They came to Hudson somewhere around the turn of the century and first settled in Claverick.
Mm-hmm.
And then later moved into Hudson and lived there for... Raised their children there. They had five children, I believe, mm-hmm. Of which my mother was one,
mm-hmm.
Two aunts and two uncles. I came here to visit my grandparents and my family who lived here during summers.
Yeah.
And loved it here because being a kid from Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy, you had to take a subway to go play baseball.
Wow.
In Bed-Stuy,
yeah.
up here, you go a few blocks. You know, behind the school and the baseball field.
Wow,
there.
Yeah.
So I loved coming up here because it was the era of Jackie Robinson,
mm-hmm.
you know, and put a lot of interest and enthusiasm amongst young black men
mm-hmm.
who played baseball, and that's all we did.
You must have followed him on the radio or TV if they had, you know, the Dodgers games.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
the TV was coming in, I guess.
My uncle, who was a member of the 761st Tank Battalion, who fought in Germany and France, was in the service with Jackie Robinson.
Oh.
So I met Jackie Robinson when I was 10 years old. 1947 when he broke into the big leagues. And my uncle would take me to the ball game and then we would drive Jackie home after the game because he lived about six blocks from where we lived.
That must have been exciting.
It was very, back at the time. But, you know, when you're 10 years old, it was a big deal to sit with, but it could have been Pee Wee Reese. I've been just as excited.
Yeah.
Because he was a big league baseball player. You know, star. Didn't occur to me about the black stuff so much, you know.
Jackie Robinson came from the West Coast, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he was out there for a while.
Yep.
He had I've heard him speak.
That's his home. He was born in Georgia, I believe.
Oh, really?
But then he was raised in California. Yeah.
But he had a voice I can still hear it in my mind. I can hear his voice.
Yeah.
He's a very good speaker.
Yeah.
And later on he represented, I think, a company and he was...
Heart full of nuts.
Yeah, but I remember as a kid seeing them listed here and there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was alive to know who he was, not as a baseball player, but it's interesting. When I was in fourth grade, my teacher was from Queens. And at the time, she was a big, I think she had been a Dodgers fan. I didn't know anything about Dodgers. I didn't know that they were in Brooklyn.
No.
I knew they were L.A., I think years later I found, when I read about it, that they lived in Brooklyn.
Right.
And there were very a lot of people very dedicated to the Dodgers.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, you know, in my lifetime, I don't think I've ever known a team that was as close-knit, that brought a whole community, the New York City five boroughs, together. Even if you were a Yankee fan or a Giant fan, everyone was rooting for Jackie Robinson to do well and that the New York Giants would then recruit and sign black players, and the Yankees finally did with Elston Howard. So the Giants, Willie Mays and Monty Irvin, and it went from there. So, and what it did, particularly in Brooklyn, was bring all creeds and colors together as a community. And
it sounded back then, today we were so divisive, it might have been at that point, it was a little better.
Oh, much.
More civil.
Oh, much.
Even if things, we didn't have the civil rights laws, but there was more civility.
Right.
I know growing up after you, but seeing the 60s, today what goes on, it's difficult for me.
Yeah.
Nobody is yelling at each other.
Yeah, see, that's the difference. Back then, you did have the institutional racism, but you didn't have the bigotry. you see.
Seems it's worse now.
Oh, it's much worse. It's much worse. Now it's all about bigotry. I mean, certainly institutional racism prevails.
Yeah.
And probably always will. But you don't have the individualized hatred and bigotry that we have, sparked by this president fellow, in particular. It probably started with Bush, but it certainly has blossomed under this particular... It's kind of ruined the country as far as I'm concerned. So it's getting to a point where the music that we're talking about, the Crossroads sound, is becoming a thing of the past. And that's why I like to play it on my program, that people know there was somebody named Duke Ellington, and there was somebody named Count Basie.
Can I ask you,
Washington.
You might know if Duke Ellington, I used to buy all my records and know the discography, and I would know, I would look at the records to see who was playing, so after a while I knew, from my ear I could know, I know Harry Carney, and I know Johnny Hodges. I know when you listen to Johnny Hodges, that piano sax or
alto
sax, that's a unique sound.
Yeah.
Johnny Hodges,
right.
When I hear it,
yeah.
And Duke Ellington is my favorite
a
jazz musician, and I still hear it. I mean, even the sound that goes along with these interviews is Duke Ellington.
Yeah, I mean, I still to this very day, I may have lost I can almost tell you everybody in the whole band. I can almost tell you, almost. I may miss a few.
Could I ask you, when do you think, do you see an era when the band you thought was at its peak, or do you see it just as changing from the decades?
That's a good question. Because just when I thought that, the old Cottontail, Perdido era was going in by the boards and those big bands were becoming a little bit on the downside and obsolete, Duke Ellington did a concert at Newport. And, he had been told by someone, hey, Duke, you got to come up with something different because folks are used to your old sound. And he came up with that Newport CD, album, that was a whole new sound, That mellow, smooth sound became really, lots of brass and solos. I mean, he cut that Paul Gonzalez loose on that long solo he did. I think just when I thought, well, let's move on, Duke kind of, raised his head up and did a whole new era of, fantastic. And then he went back to being mellow again with Satin Doll and those kind of songs. So, yeah, just when you thought, oh, Duke's on their way out, well, they were all getting older, and some of the band people had passed away, moved on, doing their own thing with sextets and quintets. But Duke, he just came up with a whole new sound. So, to answer your question, I think he kept his Duke Ellington lovers with him through the whole process. And nobody lost a step with him. Even if they thought this was the end of Duke, well, came right back with that sound in Wichita, Newport, rather.
Yeah, I was wondering, do you have the CD itself? Do you collect these?
I have the album.
Oh, the album. Yeah. Oh, I wish I could find it in CD.
You can. But I put everything on my iPod.
I listened to Duke Ellington, and then a friend of mine... My college took me to Lincoln Center where they had the Newport Jazz at Lincoln Center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I got to hear the newer stuff.
Okay.
Mingus and all these other people with the jazz became less of a dance.
Right.
Like Duke Ellington. You had
progressive sound.
You had progressive where people were sitting. Now I guess today's jazz might be evolved.
Good point. It was another good point. But see, the significance of that is back in the day, people like Chick Webb, Jimmy Lunsford, and those kind of bands, they were ballroom bands.
Mm-hmm.
And so if people of all colors wanted to go and dance, it was big band music.
Yeah.
So guys like Lunsford and Chick Webb and those guys were the major, you know, they were the initial big band. So then Duke Ellington came along and followed in that same, that's how they made money, by being, you know, dance bands. And it wasn't until sometimes after that, people begin to enjoy and appreciate the talents of the musicians in those bands. And then it evolved to a less of a dancing band, but a listening band. I mean, if you could dance to the song that they played in particular, fine. But they're no longer going to be able to say, here's Duke Ellington at the Savoy in 1955.
Yeah.
That was 45 and 35, yeah. But not so. The whole Savoy dance to jazz scene evolved to a more, wow, these guys can play. Let's listen to them. You know, let's go see them at Birdland, you know, as opposed to the Savoy. So,
what brought you to WGXC? You knew about it when it started?
No, I was called by someone who told me about GXC and asked me if I was interested in joining the group. And I was asked to meet with someone, and we met at the Wonder Bar, I believe. I'm not quite sure. And we talked. I forget her name. She did a lot of the initial training.
Uh-huh.
And she wanted me to, so they kind of recruited me. I didn't know anything about them until she called me and said, we'd like you to join our group. And so I came, and I liked what I saw. We were a nice bunch of people coming together in the very, very inception of a radio station. And for me, it was a brand new experience going through the process of what goes into the development of a radio station, the meetings and, you know, the work groups and the bond raising and all that goes with it. It was just fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone said to me, well, why don't you do a show? I said, well, I don't know anything about doing a show. I'm not going to operate these damn, you know, consoles and things. I'm too old now for that. They kept bugging me. So I said, well, I'll give it a try. I had probably got something to say and some music to play. And that's how I got involved. That was way back in the very beginning of GXC, 2010 or 11, a long time ago.
Well, Alan, it's been so delightful listening to the stories and learning more, a little bit more about aspects of your life and focusing on. But again, this is Alan Skerritt, one of the early, I guess, founding broadcasters here at WGXE 90.7. This is Rob Gellis, Rob Around the County. And I want to thank you, Alan.
My pleasure, Rob.
Thank you so much.